You're listening to CIOI. Indy 101.5. Hamilton's home for alternative.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air, as always. And it's Tuesday, and I hope your Tuesday has been great so far. I hope your evening's been treating you well, and I hope that this just makes it a little bit better. Tonight, I am hanging out with Devin Bateson. Devin is an alternative hip-hop slash electronic artist based here in Hamilton. You can find Devin on socials under DeBateson, and you can find his website at devinbateson.com, and you can also find him on all streaming services and Bandcamp as Devin Bateson. So, hey, Devin.
Hey, how's it going? Wow, that was a delightful plug of all my stuff.
Yeah, no problem. Thank I always you. Try to. Yeah.
That's perfect. How's it going? And even Bandcamp, my favorite.
There you go. I always try to. You know, it's important for musicians, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess to kind of, you know, I tried to summarize your style, even though, you know, I know that it's...
I've never been called electronic. And I was like, sure, I'll take it.
There we go. There
it's
we go.
Like, but that's, I feel like that's kind of it. I don't, it's hard for me to summarize it.
Sure, yeah. And I think alternative is a, you know, a big umbrella term. So that, yeah. That fits a lot of things for sure. I guess, you know, just to start everything off, if you can, how would you describe your sound and style?
I mean, it's definitely like a form of hip hop mm-hmm. to some level. Mm-hmm. I say experimental, but I mean, that is also a larger umbrella. Mm-hmm. And then it also depends on who I'm trying to sell it to in that moment. If it's just like weird beats, which is one of my favorite things to do, then I kind of go with like a more, I call it experimental hip hop or sound art is one. Is another way to go with that, depending. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's just kind of, I guess, more an alternative rap or hip hop.
Right.
And sometimes it's like kind of comedy, which I try not to pitch it too much as that. But sometimes, you know, it is. And that works, too. So it's kind of like a weird, I'd almost call it experimental comedy in that regard.
Sure, sure. A little bit of Bo Burnham in there, that sort of thing.
I've heard that. I have heard that. Yeah.
Do you take that as a compliment, or are you a fan of both?
I try to take it as a compliment.
Sure.
I learned how to take it as a compliment.
Right.
Because it's coming from the right place when people say it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm against Bo Burnham, I can see the comparison, but it's also like, hey, white guy doing music.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it. It's, you know, when I was younger, it used to kind of be like, oh, Beastie Boys and Bloodhound Gang or something, you know, mm-hmm. like, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. White guy, you know, kind of appropriating music, easy to compare
mm-hmm.
to sure. another white guy. But, I can appreciate a fair amount of Bo Burnham's skills, but I can't play the piano.
Totally. Yeah.
And he can.
Yeah, yeah. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences then? And then at the same time, would you say there are like comedic influences in there?
So the biggest, I'd say musical influence would be, so a lot of the work by Dan the Automator.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I don't, did you know Dan the Automator?
I don't.
Okay. So he, do you know Deltron 3030?
That sounds familiar, but I don't know.
So it's kind of a, I don't know, Dr. Octagon. So there's these like early 2000s kind of style of alternative hip hop. And mm-hmm. I don't think they'd call it alternative at the time. It was just like hip hop, and it was kind of like super kind of out of left field almost. I think they would call it that.
Right.
And more story based and more just kind of wonky weird guys with a little bit of like a little bit of story behind it. And so Dan the Automator created, he was the producer for those things. And I just always kind of loved what he was doing with these other rappers. And his style is just this like dusty, jazzy stuff. He has this amazing album that I would recommend to everyone called Songs to Make Love to Your Old Lady By. And it is beautiful. And it's like just meant to be an homage to these like weird, those like exactly what the title is, but like an homage to that weird, like, oh, somebody totally has made an album like that in the 70s, you know? So it's kind of like he's making fun of that while still making it this like, I don't know, great sample based record. So I'd say that kind of for me really like when I saw someone could do that with music and hip hop, I was like, oh my God. Cause kind of almost before that, I was like a punk, you know, in high school, I liked punk music and ska. If I must really out myself, I was a big fan of ska. Sure. And then kind of hearing hip hop in the earlier 2000s or kind of more when I went to college and hearing that, I was like, oh my God, this blows my mind. Mm-hmm. And he has there's some comedy within that, and that's it in there. Comedy music, there's not a lot of people in music specifically that I'm like, yes, that's like where I would take it from. Like Bo Burnham, I see it, so it's like, and I've seen it, so it's like clearly I would be taking something from that, right? Like I'm not blind.
Totally.
And there's a man, John, I can never say his name, it's like John Joey, something like that, but he was from Montreal originally, and he was like kind of like an internet guy who just had a bunch of really great silly songs. He was an actor in the TV show The League. And so he played Taco. But he kind of started out on YouTube and kind of that like earlier to mid early-ish YouTube era where people started becoming kind of hit makers or famous or whatever that word would be, that fame of that time, 2016 or early 2014. I'm just throwing out dates. Let's say 2014 is that era that I'm now claiming as an era. But like he has some, like, you know, he just has like silly songs, and at the time they were silly. I'm not going to list off some of the name of the songs, because the one I can think of just, I'm like, I don't even want to list it off because it feels so childish, but he then gravitated and created his own. Like there's like guys like that who create their own, like, it's like, yes, you know that you can get people will listen to something silly and easy, but like what you want to make is something a little more from the heart, and he kind of grew like that, I think, in his music.
Totally.
I'm going to go with that as my answer.
There we go. Sounds great. And what do you feel as though you take from those influences and like use for your music?
Definitely from Dan the Automator. I will never be able, in my brain at least, I will not have the skill that he has in production. But what I love what he has done. And so what I take from that is just listening to old records and enjoying like the dust on them. Like, sure. You know, it's like not finding like a clean record. It's like finding something a little dusty. And like, I love making tapes. And the reason I love making tapes is they have just a different sound, and it's so enjoyable. And just finding weird samples from like, I mean, a lot of great hip hop is made using great kind of soul samples or funk samples, and they're kind of, and you can kind of hear it and you go, oh, that's amazing. And I love just finding like garbage.
Yeah.
Just weird garbage and trying to take all that and put that to a song and see what I can make. And sometimes I love it, and sometimes I don't love it as much. And sometimes I'm like, okay, let's not even use this. And I love that. Like, that's kind of more the experimental part in me, is just like just taking as what I can and building it. But with Dan the Automator, it's just like, it's almost creating like an ambiance, you know, like just kind of that you're there in that moment and you're listening to this specific thing. So from that, I take that. And then basically anyone who does musical comedy, what I think is the most important is having a sense of bravado, like having a sense of confidence. Like even if your song You know your song is stupid when you're singing it, if it's a stupid song.
Totally.
But you have to, as a person, say, like, this is the best song you've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be like, I'm great at this. And there's took me for a while to kind of learn that skill.
Mm-hmm.
To just be like, no, I love this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you say that you go hunting for like garbage tapes, like I'm picturing like thrift store, bargain bin, that sort of thing. Where do you find those?
Yeah, so I used to use Value Village a lot and just find whatever, and like thrift stores and whatever you think no one's going to want to listen to.
Mm-hmm,
choir music, you know, like a bunch of old choir music stuff and like self-help tapes, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, so this local comedian, Manolis, he does that just all the time for himself, and he'll always be like, oh, hey, I found this. Check this out. Oh, check that. Like yesterday I saw him and he was like, oh, I have this record of like a bunch of Edgar Allan Poe just talking. And then he put it on. I was like, yeah, all right, I'll take that home and mess with it.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. And also sometimes it's so much because he's like, every time I see him, he's always like, here's something. And sometimes I got to be like, all right, I'm running out of space.
Mm-hmm.
I rent an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you remember what you listened to growing up and like what was played around the house as a kid for you? And do you feel as though those early influences have an impact on your current style?
I think so, yeah. I mean, to some level. I mean, they have to, even if it's not consciously. I'm a product of my environment for sure.
Yeah.
So I'd say younger, I listened to like what was around the house. My dad listened to a lot of like blues and jazz, and that would kind of be on. And I have I love blues now. Like I love older blues. And he has like all these old tapes he used to tape off the radio. And I love just listening to those because it'll be like from the '80s and it's just like from a radio program. And it's just like, here's the blues hour from this. And I love that. And I'll sample some of that. But that's a lot of like, that's kind of like some of the influence growing up. And then when I was young, it's just like, I grew up in the country, so there wasn't much around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, we had these, it was like it's like a Columbia House thing. Like you pay a penny or something. It was like, and you get 12, like every month you get a CD or something or a tape or whatever. And I always wanted that, and I eventually did get it. And I think like the first I got like Brand Van 3000, you know Drinking in LA. It's like a popular song from the early 2000s.
I don't know if I do. Maybe I would if I heard it.
If you heard it, I feel like you'd be like, oh, okay. Or you'd be like, nah, I don't know what he's talking about.
Right.
That's the thing. I'm talking, I'm like, ooh, I'm dating myself. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm older than you. Okay,
no problem.
I was like, all right, I figured that out. And Everclear, and then there was, and my brother, I guess, I would get some tapes. So I'd say a fair amount, actually, now that I think about it, would be coming in from what my brother gathered probably from his peer group. Like, there was this weird band, Green Jelly or Green Jello, and they were like a new metal band that did some joke or like jokey songs. Ugly Kid Joe, now it's just like floating through my brain, was this weird tape I had, also kind of maybe new metal. I also don't know. I'm so young. Queen.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Queen record and I did love that. And then in high school, it was a lot of ska bands. Less Than Jake, the Planet Smashers are a Canadian band from Montreal, and I saw them so many times growing up in high school, and really loved trumpets. You know, the sound.
Yeah.
Trumpets. Yeah. So I'd say that's my earlier.
Cool. Yeah. So I find that with most musicians, What gets them into music is that they discover a piece, whether it's like a song or an album, and it kind of gives them like a wake up call, and they're kind of like, wow, like I really, this really speaks to me, and like I wish I made that, that sort of feeling, right? Do you have that piece of music that kind of inspired you to start creating?
I don't think I do.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything that's made that I wish I created.
Okay.
Because I just don't, because I like it. And I'm like, if I made it, I might not like it.
Mm.
You know? It's, mm-hmm. Sometimes I like my stuff, but also, like, I know I'm a harsher critic to myself. So it's like, I don't, you know, I don't want to ruin albums I like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's like, is there like a thing that really, that I wish I created that kind of like opened my eyes to making music?
Yeah. And I mean, like, there could be multiple influences there, right? So.
Oh, I mean, there was a bunch of hip hop I heard in, it was like, yeah, I'd say like the early 2000s or like 2008. Okay. There's this era of hip hop. Kind of underground hip hop. So people like Aesop Rock,
mm-hmm.
If you've heard of him, because mm-hmm. he'd probably be a larger yes. from that era. So Aesop, ELP or LP or whatever from Run the Jewels.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So like he was LP was like a huge influence in that. Like most people know him from Run the Jewels, mm-hmm. but he originally started in this more like kind of underground rap thing where he had Def Jukes was the name of the label, and so he had there's a guy's name Despot, and he's, I think that guy's now doing a TV show on HBO, but he like disappeared for years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of all these people in that era. Atmosphere is this guy from like Minnesota, Minneapolis, and then there's this whole so Fake Four is a record label like that. So I came from that kind of Def Jux, hearing those sounds and being like, this is not like the hip hop I'm used to. Like this is different. This is wild. These people are like kind of creating their own stuff, their own sound.
Mm-hmm.
This guy Kamu Tao. Cannibal Ox. Oh, Cannibal Ox was like that was a huge thing. Okay. I'm just like, oh man, there was some great hip hop in this era.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so coming out of that, then I kind of learned more about like Fake Four, which is this guy Chesky and Factor. And so Factor's Canadian. He lives in Saskatoon.
Right.
And he's like a great beat maker or producer. I assume he'd call himself a producer.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like a difference, you know.
Mm.
A beat maker just makes beats, producers produce like the whole thing.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chesky, him. I feel like there was Astronautilus was on there, and this guy Bluebird, and I think Bluebird had like been in Canada a bit. But anyway, like I just kind of found out about them just hearing about it, and that kind of just changed my perspective of what hip hop was. Because I think even when I was really young and like into like punk and ska and just living in the country and just being like a white kid, I did not understand hip hop. Right. And I'm sure mm-hmm. I looked at it through some type of racist view,
sure.
like whether like not out of hatred, but definitely out of like, you know, systemic racism, especially mm-hmm. in the freaking white country that I live in.
Yeah.
Not that I live in the white country, but I was in the country. Most of the people in there were white.
I came from a similar area, so I definitely understand.
Crazy. Where'd you come from?
Beamsville.
Beamsville. Yeah. Yeah. I came from Binbrook.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. And it was like Binbrook before it was like what it is now. So it was just Four Corners.
Yeah.
So
I'm familiar.
It was, mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. So you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think when I first see it, I heard Wu-Tang Clan or something, and I just didn't get it. I remember some kid being like, oh, these guys are great. I'm like, I don't know, man. I remember just being like a jerk to them, kind of being like, I was like, they're just rhyming words. And then it wasn't until much later that I was like, yeah, all songs are rhyming words.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most songs are rhyming words. But then even then, years later, I heard this hip-hop, and they're like, sometimes they're not even rhyming words. And I'm like, whoa. Oh, man.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's poetry, right? You know, it can be anything. It's art. So it's like, and unabashedly, which is like what I admire. It's just like, it doesn't always, like, trying to make something new is so beautiful than trying to make something that, like, appeases the masses.
Oh, yeah.
And appeasing the masses is, of course, important. Like, there needs to be, we all need a good glass of water. But it's nice to have something a little, you know, a little sharper sometimes.
Totally, totally. And how did you first get into, like, playing and creating music? Did you start on an instrument? Did you start with vocals? How did that begin?
When I was really young, I played the drums for maybe a couple years or maybe, like, a year. I did a lot of things where I would get into a hobby and then be like, ugh. Like, I think the thing I liked the most out of my youth was I was like a figure skater. Grade four.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel like that's, you know, honestly, I'm going to chalk that as being my biggest influence.
Cool.
Is figure skating. But I then eventually, like, I took up drumming, and then I was just like, I don't get this. But, like, I practiced forever because I was just like, I want to be a drummer. But, like, I also didn't know anybody who played any other instruments at the time, or at least, maybe nobody wanted to play with me. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. I was the weird kid. And then I think, yeah. And then I just was like, I guess I'm just, like, not musical. And then I think sometime in high school, I think it was just really like that conversation with that guy where I was kind of a jerk to him about the Wu-Tang Clan. Kind of really, I think, really made me kind of get into my head and just be like, yeah, but what? Wait a second. Like, what is hip hop? And, like, I had already listened to the Beastie Boys and didn't even, like, kind of fathom them as being hip hop. Like, even, like, Run DMC, right? Like, at the time, to me, that was rock music and still kind of to me is somewhat early Beastie Boys and Run DMC, at least is heavily rock influenced. So I don't think I, like, even knew that it was, like, hip hop. And then I remember I had this little tape recorder, and so I just, like, made my own rap, and I just, like, rapped. I had this little beat in my head, and I did it. And then kind of was like, yeah, that was fun. You know, that's cool. And then I kind of, like, tucked that away in a drawer. And then I think one day my brother was like, hey, I found your recorder, and I listened to your rap song. I was like, oh God. And he was like, it's actually pretty good. I was like, oh, thank you, because I was waiting for him to just, like, pick on me.
Oh, yeah.
As he often did. So I was like, oh, cool. That's neat. And then, like, I don't know, probably years passed, and then I went to college, and in college I was in for, it was radio broadcasting and film, and so we had to do a bunch of radio stuff, and I was there for film. Like, I wanted to do film, but the radio stuff, I was just good. I knew the programs well. I could kind of learn them quick, and I enjoyed kind of messing with voice and stuff like that and creating. It's messing, like, audio is, I don't know, it's so beautiful in a sense of, like, you create these visual stories without visuals, and I really love that. And so I kind of just kind of learned the programs, and then I would make loops and beats because you could find those. It was Cool Edit Pro was the thing way back in the day, and it was the bee's knees.
Right.
So I kind of learned that. I looped, and then I was, like, kind of messing around with raps, at least just in my it's not a dorm room because I didn't live on campus. It's like an apartment or whatever. I lived in a little house, my room. That in Welland, and so I just kind of record some stuff, and I didn't really have a good mic, so I'd record on, like, a camera that I had or whatever, like, anywhere that I could do it, and try to put it together, and I would make some kind of music with that. And then me and my buddy, we had a, like, little sketch troupe because we always loved sketch, like Kids in the Hall, Mr. Show, all these things were huge influences in that regard. And so him and me had always kind of done sketches, and then YouTube was big, so we were doing sketches. And he was also like, oh, why don't we, like, do one of your raps? Like, we'll just put it, why don't we mess with that? And like, you know, you're silly. And that's the thing, most people, like, when I started kind of more rapping publicly, I had already been doing stand-up for a while, and some of the stuff I say is already kind of silly. So it's like, I have a friend, and he's very kind. Jordan Shear was, like, one of the people who told me, I was just like, ah, you know, I'm, I can't remember. I was complaining to him about something, but he was just telling me, he's like, well, it doesn't matter because you're already kind of silly. Like, he's like, a song that's not a comedy song for you honestly might end up being a comedy song for somebody else. Because he's like, the way you view the world and articulate it is already funny, honestly. And I was like, it was actually really nice.
I was gonna say, that's a great compliment. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So, but yeah, so with Albert No Man Hurts was the name of our really old sketch troupe on YouTube, and there's there's stuff still there, and it's horrible. Just the worst garbage. But at the time we were doing okay, as far as YouTube was, you know, like 300 views. Whoa. Wow. Big time. But yeah, then, I don't know, then I kind of did that, and I always then, like, we stopped doing those sketches, and I kind of always recorded stuff, and there was an era of SoundCloud where it was like it's a great way to just kind of get your music out, but not need to feel like you need to be huge. It was just like a nice way to put tracks out, and then people would listen to them, like random people, and they'd comment, and you'd comment on other things, and it was such a nice little, it was kind of like in the blog era, I guess,
right,
of the internet. So it's like that similar stuff where everyone's just kind of sharing, and it's for the most part like a kinder internet. And then you'd share with other people and stuff like that, and I kind of just secretly did that, and then years later I started doing stand up, and then music I always had then I just kind of put it to the side. I kind of put it like, I still did it, but it was never like, okay, I'm not going to show anyone I do this. I'll just like rap and write songs to beats. And then eventually I was also like, I should make my own beats. Cause I think I eventually put out a little album of like with other people's beats and my raps and stuff. It was a short EP, and I was proud of it, and I was just like, yeah, you know what? Like, this is what I'm doing, instead of being embarrassed. Because it's, especially coming from comedy, that I'm just like, nah, here's some, like, real, or what is real to me. Like, just, here's me doing something that I enjoy and sounds okay. And people received it very well. And for the most part, I think everyone was very kind. You know, people bought it because I put a price on it. Because I was just like, you know what? I'm also going to charge for it because I think that's important. And it's taken me forever to realize that just, you know, to make something worth something, you also have to make it worth something. And that is a lot. And I still learned that lesson. Then I put that out, and then I started making my own beats, and I just really loved that. That was like a whole world. And that kind of took over for a while of just making weird instrumentals. And I love that. And the goal was to kind of combine them, and now I do. Although sometimes it's like a lot easier for me to make a bunch of instrumentals than hear my own voice.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think that somewhat answers your question.
Yeah, I think it does. And you said that you struggled a bit with that confidence, especially when you're putting out sillier things and everything. How was that journey for you to becoming self-confident?
I mean, I'm still not there, but I am there. I like, so when I perform now, at least music, I try to give off an air of self-confidence. And it's coming from, how I learned it is just kind of going, you know what, screw it. This is mine, and I'm doing it because I like it. You know, there's a reason I'm doing it. So whatever, if someone doesn't like it, it doesn't matter. And also kind of avoiding looking at yourself, or me specifically, looking at myself from like an overhead view. It's kind of just being present in the moment and being there.
Right.
And being like, this is a beautiful time to just doing stuff. And just performance in general is just, it's freeing, and it's so fun when it's fun, but it's also so miserable when it's not fun. Especially like stand-up, like music. I don't want to say music is easier, but it is easier to some level, because, or at least what I'm doing with it is easier, because there's no, the silences don't matter, and what is silence, it doesn't matter, and you don't have to, like, people are used to listening to the radio.
Right.
So, and sometimes, yeah, people talk over music, and that does suck, but it's like people talking over you talking is way worse.
Mm.
That is like, and you're like, oh, you're here for stand-up, and you don't want to even hear me talk. This mm-hmm. is hard. Mm-hmm. Where music, you know, someone, you might see someone talking, and you're like, well, they're, you know, they're, of course they're chatting, whatever, I'm just playing music. So, and I guess just getting rid of that, those like nagging little things and just playing.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, just finding like the freeness in it has been great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's that whole heckling aspect to comedy, right? And to stand up.
Yeah.
How has that been for you?
I've never had too much of a problem in stand up for that. I think I'm odd. Like the stand-up I do is not, I'm not often talking about the little foibles in life or whatever. You know, I'm never like, oh, I woke up today.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't waking up crazy?
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh man, here's a story about Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Secretly, I'm trying to tell you why I think sexism is bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or like, it's just, or like, I'm always trying to, or at least that's more lately. I'm just like, here's a long-winded story that sounds absolutely insane and intangible or, yeah, but like I'm trying to just say these little pieces within it of like what I think is morally just.
Sure.
But so also to follow, you have to. It's hard to heckle me if you're not following me.
Right.
Most people will say is like, "Oh, this man's insane."
Mm-hmm.
I have had that, you know, like mm-hmm. but most of the time people say it after, like they won't technically kind of berate me on stage. I can't remember, years ago, somebody said something to me, and I know I did well with it. I mm-hmm. just, like, he was talking to me on stage, and then I talked back to him, and I got a couple jokes out, and I was like, oh, that was fun. But that was almost, like, one of the few people who really, or maybe I'm just ignoring them. I might just be in my own little world, you know? People might be heckling me, and I might be like, what?
That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think you know you're doing a good job if somebody calls you insane. You know?
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so too. If people look at you and you're like, that man's insane, you're like, thank you.
Yeah.
This is what I've been trying to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
What is it? I did a show on Thursday and an older man after the show, he said, like, how long have you been off your meds for?
Mm.
Which I took to high offense because I'm not on meds. And if I was off my meds, wow. That'd mm-hmm. be hurtful.
That would.
But also, I was like, all right, cool. I was insane and high energy. So, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. A compliment. Like, thank you.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, sir.
Yeah. Did you take lessons when it came to creating music?
I mean, only drum lessons when I was really young.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I took those at, like, Mohawk College. So I would have been, like, grade 6.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that was only really kind of learning maybe rhythm and timing. I don't even know. Honestly, right. I still don't think I know that.
Right. Who does? I mean.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But no. And so the instrument that I use is not really like it's a sampler. So it's the SP-404. I just did a lot of research on mm-hmm. it and then would watch YouTube videos and like just see what people did. And then I read the manual. That was honestly, that was like the biggest thing is like just reading the manual and then playing with this thing for hours and hours and just like sampling different things and then combining it and then just kind of seeing how the machine really works.
Right.
And I think I wouldn't have known how to do that. I'm sure drumming itself helped me long-term because a lot of the beats I'm making are like beat oriented. So drums
mm-hmm.
And kind of just from school, just like learning those programs where you're editing on a computer. And the reason I got the 404 was to get away from that. It was like, I want to create on a thing. Like, I don't want to be staring at a screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that I value that so much on this machine.
Mm-hmm.
On everything in the world. That's why I've really gotten into reading books lately. Cause I'm just like, I gotta get off my phone.
Mm-hmm. What are you reading?
Right now I'm reading The $12 Million Shark.
Oh.
And it is about art and commerce, and I would not recommend it. I'm almost done. I've wanted to read it for a while, because I was like, yeah, that seems interesting. And honestly, it would be interesting if it was half as... It's not even that big of a book. But if it was, mm-hmm. like, half as big as it is, it would be great. It would be more concise and tight. It would be great, but it is off.
Right.
One book I just finished. I still have it. It's from the library. It's called The Miracles of the Namiya General Store. That I would recommend.
Ooh, okay.
I don't read a lot of fiction. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's about a general store that these three burglars go into, and the guy who ran it used to give out advice. And then it's like one day, so that guy's been dead for years. Those three burglars are suddenly there hiding out, and like a letter slides in through the door asking for advice. And then they are like, I guess we'll try to answer this. And then that's kind of like the beginning of the story.
Wow. Interesting.
It's like magical, simple. It's got some heartfelt stuff in it.
Cute.
It was a nice read. I loved it. Yeah. So I was like, all right, I want to recommend a book.
Yeah.
I'm also reading The Big Payback, which is this big book about, it's about like the business of hip hop, like the history of the business of hip hop.
Oh, cool.
And that one's good. It's also just like, it's huge. It's comprehensive.
I bet.
Yeah. And I read a book. It's by that same author called Dilla Time, which was about Jay Dilla. Hmm. And that book was awesome.
Cool.
But this book's good, but it's just like, it's huge. And I'm like, all right.
Wow. Are you an avid reader?
Yeah. Only recently. Yeah. Recently I've read most of my life, but never much. And there's times where I haven't read, I wouldn't have never read in a year, but I've probably since the beginning of this year read at least like 8 books.
Great.
Yeah. And that's like never happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now, I don't know. I've been trying to find ways to get away from just like the internet, my phone, stuff like that. And I found I write a lot of poetry. So I was reading a lot of poetry, and I found a way to basically I would just read a poem instead of picking up my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just check this thing. And I was like, I'll just read a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of started me going into more like, I want to pick up my phone, or I want to do a thing, and then I'd be like, well, I'll just read a page.
Yeah.
And learning how to read in short bursts really helped me read.
Because
I used to think you'd have to like sit down, you'd have to make a big to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, read a page, read a paragraph.
Yeah.
So it's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What poetry were you reading? Are you into poets?
I'm still learning poets that I like, but
sure.
This guy, I really fell in love with his work, Bob Kaufman.
Okay.
And he is this, he's like a beat poet, kind of from that era, but he was from San Francisco, and he was just, it just blew my mind. It's just like really, really like abstract.
Cool.
Stuff. And just like, he's like kind of from the era of Jack Kerouac, but I don't like Jack Kerouac. I tried to read some Jack Kerouac, and I just don't.
Right.
Like, and I know like people liked him, but he's also like, I know he was kind of like a womanizer and a piece of crap, but Bob Kaufman was this, and he was like a guy who was trying to be forgotten almost. Like, he kind of near the end of his life, he was just also like, no, I'm just, he would like just stand up and say a poem in a coffee shop, and then like, sit back down or leave or whatever. His poems were very, people like had to write it down,
right?
Or like find it. I guess there was like a fire at his house or something, or like his apartment when that would have been like the 70s or the 60s, but like one of his friends like ran inside and grabbed like his writings. But like Bob was like, I don't care, whatever, like who cares?
There's
poems. And I love that, like the I don't know, he seemed to understand or have a belief in like how ephemeral things are. Like, he's just like a moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess he was never too popular in kind of North America. Like, he's somewhat had some popularity, but it was mainly in like Paris or like France or whatever. So like there was some company that like published some of his work, and people there really took to it.
Totally.
He was great. And I learned about him through a rapper I follow who used to go by the name Milo, but now he just goes by his name. It's just Rap Ferreira, and that guy is awesome. That is some like off kilter, amazing rap what that guy's putting out. But I saw him post something about him, and I think one of his albums was called Son of Bob or something, a recent one. But I mean, like when he posted something about it, I was like, "What's this? Who's this guy?" And I was like, "Whew, yeah, worth it." I would recommend to every person who's ever read poetry.
Okay.
And those who haven't.
Yeah, good to know. All right. Well, I think we're gonna hit pause on this conversation for a quick second, and we're gonna play everyone listening a single from Devin. "Smoke Quotes" is a single off of his 2020 EP, Swift Tuttle, a brief existentialist track about working through the rough parts of life. Everybody just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with the Hamiltonian alternative hip-hop and electronic musician Devin Bateson. We just came back from playing Smoke Quotes. How long did it take to write that song?
Oh, I don't know. Probably longer. I mean, every song takes longer than I want it to.
Right.
But I think that's one that I probably sat on. Honestly, a couple months, but I write tracks similar to that sometimes, and then fuck them out. Not the beat. The beat I enjoyed. The beat was, I felt just like, I don't know, similar to what I do, but a little different. Had like these little, I don't know what they're called. I'm going to call them tiny drums, like snares or whatever, you know, but like, it sounds like a little tiny drum kit.
Yeah.
And, I don't often put those in things, and I was like, oh, this is nice. And then, but like the song, like the lyrics are good. I wanted something simple, but it like probably started out as, yeah, but it's always like an existentialist thing. Yeah. When you described it as that, I was like, yeah, wow.
Perfect.
Most of my stuff is, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I probably wrote most of the lyrics pretty quick, probably in a night is my guess. And then I would edit over time, like, cause I generally have the beat and I write to the beat and then I practice it. Like, or I just do it. Like, I'll just like, you know, in the morning, sometimes if I have time, I'll just like play the beat and then kind of go over the lyrics. And then I'll sometimes make adjustments if I find something fits or doesn't fit. And I'll do that for months, or some songs I'll do that for years. Some songs, there's songs that I've released that I then change a lyric or two when I perform it live, because I'm like, oh, I like this lyric better.
Right. Yeah. How long, I mean, you kind of answered that already, it seems like it's kind of all over the map, but how long do your songs take to write generally?
Yeah, I mean, so most, like, it kind of depends, but like most of them are pretty quick. I'd say on average, the core of it is fast. Like when I wrote something down first, I just kind of sat down and started writing to a beat. And the beat, who knows how long that took me to make. Like, that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. But then the lyrics itself, yeah, it's like I just like write it down generally pretty fast, and then I might stop at like the first verse or the chorus sometimes. I might start with the chorus, and then I might sit down another time and then write it. And then I might delete the whole first verse. Like, I might end up writing the second verse and be like, oh, this is where I want the song to go. And then I delete the first verse because I'm like, this doesn't work. Or I'll move that whole first verse to another pile. I'll call them piles, but they're folders or files. Mm-hmm. But I would, and I store all those. Like, I have a million raps that are just like going nowhere. Mm-hmm. But they're there. They just float around. And I have I've like taken some and used them in a different song before. Cause I'm like, I think something way back when kind of fit. But I also don't like to dig too far back. Cause I think as I grow older, I have different perspectives, and I think I'm better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it can take, that's the thing. I'd say the core of it might take, honestly, it could take 15 minutes, but then it might take me months to really just get it how I like it.
Sure.
By practicing it, rewriting it, and just like adjusting every little thing. And then memorizing, I've done that or a bunch where I'll memorize a full track. And then as it's memorized, I go, oh no, I got to get rid of this verse. This makes no sense or something, or I want this to make more sense, or I want this to hit a different, like, I'm feeling about this song differently. So I'll rewrite it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I have to just say, hey, man, this is done.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta stop yourself from editing too much, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And where did your lyrics come from, generally?
It's a lot of introspection. Mm-hmm. Or just me trying to, like even especially with this song, even it's often just trying to convince myself that life isn't bad.
Yeah.
It's just me trying to be like, hey man, it's actually not too bad. It's actually really nice. You have a good life, or at least there are times in life where you feel life is good.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of remember those moments.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you have such a sad disposition on life in general, or sometimes I feel like I might, and then I'm like, oh, maybe I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think a lot of tracks are me just convincing myself and just kind of talking myself up into a world of like, hey man, this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you self-produce, or do you work with like a couple other people to record and produce things, or how does that go?
It's just me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like, sometimes I wish I did.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just to like get feedback and throw it off of people. But most of the time it's just cause I'm just like, I make all my beats. Other than like the first album I did. So I make all my beats and then like I record them at home. I mean, to some level I'd like to record in a studio one day maybe, but it's also like a lot of, it's like I'm making, I don't know. It's like the idea of it. I'm still always working. It's like that idea of art and commerce, because I don't view myself as like a mass marketable person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and maybe I can be, maybe I am, who knows.
And sometimes, sometimes that's how you find your audience, and that's how you market yourself. Right.
Right. Like, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so and sometimes it's just finding those people, or those people finding you, And that's it. I just have to, I'm just finding that groove or whatever. But that's also it. Sometimes it's just like, all right, man, just stop arguing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, make the thing and enjoy the thing and do the thing and market yourself, cause sometimes I'm like, marketing is the worst. I'm like, yeah, but it's also not,
mm-hmm.
It's also part of stuff.
Yeah. Part of life. Part of life. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like if you want friends, you have to talk to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's right, and that's really marketing. It's just like, hey, do you want to be my friend?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
With producing, it's just all me and at home. I mean, there are people who I value their opinion and stuff like that, who will sometimes get to just kind of hear tracks, but even then, it's a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sad, lonely man. No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But It sounds like that when it does. I was like, oh, I just sound like that.
Sure. I mean, you know, also when you bring in a producer and all that kind of stuff, that's also money. So.
Well, that's it. I don't have the money to do that. Which it, and that sounds cool. And it, I mean, then it also just like it create. It's a different kind of art.
Sure.
And it's a, it creates a different product or a different piece. Like, just even reading about art, right? Like, there's, like, you look at, like, a Warhol, and I'm honestly not a fan of Andy Warhol. Like, people can be, and that's fine, but that, and that is a very branded form of art. But that is also, a lot of it is someone being like, here's what I want. You all go make that. And then he signs off on it, right? So it's kind of like, is, he's, I mean, he's an artist, or he's more of, like, an architect in that regard. Whereas, like, the people actually making it are, you know, struggling artists or artists who are, I don't know, actually doing the thing with their hands. So it's also like, is the person's vision the art, or is, and who's the artist in that regard? And they're all artists, but then it's like the reason the art costs money or is expensive or is viewed by people is because someone else signs their name on it. But then, but they are not. Then, you know, they're not as big as like everyone else who built them up, but it's also like they are the top. That's just me reading that book.
A lot of working parts.
Yeah. And I don't have that, which I, you know, for some to some level is kind of a blessing to just make stuff and be like, all right, cool. And then no one's like, dude, you can't make that, or like, that won't sell. It's just like, all right, here's a doodad.
You're the only person I have to say, so.
Yeah, and when here's another sad rap. People want that.
Exactly. Do you have a favorite song of yours?
I have a favorite song of mine. I do. I'm sure I must. I want to look. I'm like, I'm kind of near some stuff. I'm just...
Go ahead.
What would be... I mean... I do like Smoke Quotes for a level, to some level. There is a song I love and hate a bunch of. Windows is a song on Swift Tuttle that I do live because it's silly. And I love it on a level of, the beat is just made by like a couple feedback loops that I took and turned and like kind of changed the tones. And then threw some drums too and just kind of made it like loud and crispy and whatever, and then and made a song to it, and it was like the experiment of doing that was just so fun, and then the lyrics are just silly, and it's something I know that I can do in most places, and people will be like, what's that guy doing? That's fun. You know, it's a very simple thing for me to grab onto or grab people's attentions, and I found like at a show, if I just like kind of open with that, someone's like, wait a second. First, I'm just talking about, I don't know, how cool I am is kind of the thing. And then the second verse is just me talking about birds. And this song is about windows. And like, so the name of it is just Windows. So, I mean, I don't know if that's my favorite, but it's, I know it's one I liked the experience of creating it. And I know it's one that I can kind of just throw out there real fast.
Totally. Yeah. It's a favorite.
Pardon?
Is it a favorite, but maybe not?
I'd say a favorite. Yeah. Like, I don't know, because I feel like finding one favorite song would be tough, and it would change. I feel like every day.
Yeah.
I got some songs that are unreleased that I love, but I'm gonna hate them soon. Pardon?
Little sneak peek there.
I don't have. You can't wait. Can you have a sneak peek?
I mean, you know, is there? Do you have any upcoming release dates? Anything?
No. I'm just working on it slowly, and it's gonna take me forever. It's just like, I mean, some of them I do live. Like there are songs on the album that I've done live a bunch. Because I think I do it backwards. I think I practice songs live. And then release them, and then I go, okay, what are the next songs?
Okay, yeah.
Where I think most people kind of, like, record a song, and then they're like, I got to tour this album. And I feel like I kind of do it backwards. But I'm also like, I'm in my own little, I'm only doing, you know, handful of gigs here and there. I'm not like, all right, I'm touring the country with this thing. I mean, if I do that, great. And then that's what I'm doing.
And I guess, what can we look forward to seeing from you? Do you have any plugs? What kind of stuff?
I mean, you look forward to seeing this album whenever I do it. I'm just slowly working on it.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine is offered to pay for me for studio time for one song.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's cool. So that I'm going to try to do that and get that done. So that'll be maybe a nice crisp song.
Mm-hmm.
I will always be releasing just weird beat tapes. And sometime, and people buy them, and that's nice. Cassettes galore, like the little, I make little handmade cassettes, and it's my favorite mm-hmm. little thing. And I love selling them, only 30 at a time. But it's a weird beat tapes. You can always look forward to that, because that ain't stopping. Sometimes I think, Devin, you got to stop. But then I go, no, I have so many. There's mm-hmm. so many beats on my computer. I have to get rid of them. You know, I have to be like, here. World, yeah. Please take these away from me.
It's like recycling, you know? You just...
Yeah, exactly. I was like, here, maybe somebody else will mm-hmm. pick through this and enjoy it. But yeah, and I hopefully something more experimental and weird. And hopefully something more crisp and beautiful. I do... There's a part of me that goes like, let's make some more poppy-style songs, or at least poppy-style songs in my own sad, introspective way.
Well, I am looking forward to it all. And thank you so much for talking with me tonight. This was fun.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anytime. And everybody listening, you can find Devin on socials under DebateSun. You can check out his website at devinbateson.com. And you can find him on all streaming services and Bandcamp as Devin Bateson. We're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Devin. Voiceless Planet is from his latest instrumental EP. It's a futuristic, bright, and hopeful electronic track. Check it out.
Hey, this is Devin Bateson, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on Indie 101.5.
This is CIOI, Hamilton's home for alternative. Indy 101.5 FM.